Thanks so much again, Dr. Shiva, for the amazing speech. So now we're going to do a short question and answer session. So in order to answer the, ask the questions, so please be sure to use the microphone in the middle of the room. Thank you.
Okay, I'll go first. Ready? Yep. Is it on?
Thank you. It's an honor and a privilege to have you speak to us tonight. I'm a student here. I was just wondering, what can I do as an individual, and what can we do as a collective to help solve world hunger?
Well, as an individual, you can just make sure that your eating is not taking away from others. We have a wonderful old Upanishad which says that if you consume more than you need, then you are taking, you know, stealing from either other species, other people, or the future. That's the first. Which means not participating in non-sustainable systems of production, because non-sustainable systems of production are, in effect, taking away other people's ecological space and economic space. The second thing you can do as a collective, I believe, and this is the movements we've been building in India, is, you know, home by home, community by community, village by village. You don't have that many villages in this area, but whatever you have. You know, region by region, county by county, move towards declaring your regions organic, ecological, GMO-free. In Europe, I advise the network of GMO-free regions. There are 48 governments that have said, we don't care what the European Commission decides. We don't care what the World Trade Organization decides. We don't want GM food. We are not going to grow it. We are not going to allow it in our supermarkets. And it's a movement that's growing. It could grow in this country. Now, of course, there are many issues of risk. I don't want to talk about that. But the real issue is power. The real issue is about power and control. For me, it's a serious issue that one company today is controlling the entire seed supply of the planet. It's a very vulnerable situation. And like the House of Cards came down on Wall Street, our entire genetic supply could come down, but the consequences would be much, much larger. So one is diversify Washington agriculture. I'm happy to bring seeds to you. And second is really, you know, promote ecological diversified agriculture in the state. And as I said, if Obama so quickly can run the most important race of this country, surely Americans who've done that miracle can do the miracle of ecological agriculture. That's the next challenge.
Hi, I'm wondering if we were able to achieve the ideal of a diversified local organic agriculture, what sort of solidarity infrastructures would you suggest or think need to be in place to deal with droughts or other natural or man-made disasters to sort of stabilize food supply in areas mm-hmm. that are lacking it?
Well, you know, over the last 2 years, I've been addressing the connections between climate change and agriculture very much, and climate change, of course, is showing up in terms of intensified droughts, intensified floods. You saw them in Iowa last year, or this year, and intensified cyclones. Katrina is just one of them, but the frequency and velocity of cyclones and hurricanes is increasing. What we've been doing through Navdanya, the movement that I started in, I've expanded the community seed banks through a Seeds of Hope movement. One, in the suicide areas, and we're reversing the farm suicides in the areas of cotton, and now we're getting organic cotton as part of that movement, but we're also creating community seed banks to deal with climate change, of drought-resistant crops, flood-resistant crops, and salt-resistant crops, because cyclones basically mean salt water and land and crops that can deal with salinity. Now, these crops have been conserved. We are multiplying them. We are distributing them. We distributed tons after the tsunami. I've just found out that now the companies are claiming patents on climate resilience too. 530 patents. You cannot engineer climate resilience. It's too complex a trait. There's no drought engineering so far. You can take a drought-prone variety and put a BT gene into it or a herbicide-tolerant gene into it. But the engineering is of herbicide resistance or BT. It's not of the salt tolerance. It's not of the drought tolerance. So we are starting a campaign, and I think the most important issue now is the issue I've been fighting for, to defend seed as a commons, and especially seed that we need for dealing with climate change. It is our common defense in times of climate volatility, and no amount of really good breeding will be able to give us the diversity we have today to cushion ourselves. The second, of course, is organic farming. Soils with organic matter can deal better with drought, floods, as well as cyclones. So we have to start multiplying organic matter production. And as I've written in my book, the recent book, Soil Not Oil, the fossil fuel industry made a mess of the climate, and now the fossil fuel industry talks of decarbonizing the economy. And I say we've got to recarbonize the economy with living carbon, leave the dead carbon underground. Fossil fuels shouldn't be touched, not even coal. You can't make it clean. The real challenge is increasing the carbon in plants, increasing the carbon in soils. That living carbon economy is the real renewable economy. And that's the one that doesn't cost too much. That's the one that just needs participation. And that's the one that can become a huge vehicle of development in the South and a huge vehicle of food security in times of climate change.
So you talk about maintaining, the seed within the commons. What, if you could advise Barack Obama's administration on what next step to take to change the way intellectual properties are governed around the world, what would that advice be, and what would that next step be?
Well, I mean, it's very simple. You know, let there be patents on what's genuinely invented. Machines are, synthetic molecules are. Leave life forms out of it. And this is not my fancy. It's become now part of the negotiations of WTO. It's become part of the review process in WTO. And I think Barack Obama should recognize that seeds and life forms, just to me, the parallel is this. Slavery was about owning other people as property. It was wrong. Intellectual property rights over plants and life form is owning other species as property. It's slavery of life on earth. It's equally wrong. And if, for him, this issue was so important, then the next step has to be to liberate other species from this new slavery.
I come from maybe not by your standards, but a long line of people in agriculture and farming. I'm fourth generation, and hopefully have fifth generation here. And I am wondering more locally, what words of wisdom and advice do you have for young people here today who wish to go into farming directly, not working in offices and such things, but truly wish to work on the land? What words of wisdom and advice do you have for them? Because it's not a popular career choice.
Well, you know, just three things I would say. One is, you know, working with the soil is a very creative act. You know, it's as exciting as having a baby. Because you are nourishing life. And when you're working with the soil, you experience it, you recognize it. You know, you see those earthworms flourish, you see the plants flourish. I think we've had, since the Industrial Revolution, and especially since the industrialization of agriculture, a war declared against farmers. And it's the other, you know, when they say we have two wars, this country's fighting two wars, I'd say there's a third one, and it's being fought worldwide, including against American farmers. There's not just Iraq and Afghanistan, there's the agricultural war against the land and against farmers. We've got to stop it. But for that, young people will have to come to practice an agriculture of peace, to practice an agriculture of nonviolence and celebrate it. But young people, because they are the cutting edge of change, will also have to deal with the policies that are making it difficult for young people to be on the land. The policies, as I said, are highly artificial. The land does not say, I cannot support more of you. policies say more will not be supported because labor has been treated as the only input. And the minute you can remove half of the population of the farmland, your productivity of agriculture doubles, you know? That's the only productivity that's measured. Labor productivity, you know? One combined harvester with one person, hugely productive farmland, could be thoroughly biologically and nutritionally impoverished. So we need, like I said, we need the next step is to create a bill, build on the movements that are already there, to make it viable for a young person to farm, to make it viable for a young person to open a local restaurant, to make it viable for a young person to be able to participate in a local market. I think those are the closures that we have to open up again.
Hi, thank you for coming. I'm curious, I'm very much in agreement with you regarding the biodiversity of especially traditional ways of farming, but I'm also curious what you have to say about the tradition in India of the caste system and the great inequalities from that historical pattern, and if that is related to the lack of technology or innovation in agriculture. I'd like to hear
your
answer.
Well, the caste system has nothing to do with absence of technology. The caste system was, like anything else, an issue of power. You know, when Buddha and Mahavir started to preach their deep teachings of nonviolence, and Buddhism and Jainism start to spread in the country, just like today you have fundamentalists in this country, and they're fundamentalists in the Middle East, and they're fundamentalists everywhere, a bunch of fundamentalist Brahmins said, oh my God, if we don't structure society in a certain way, then the Buddhists, everyone will be a Buddhist. But you know, people were choosing to become more Buddhist. So they, you know, what is today called the caste system was like division of labor anywhere in the world. You know, you have glassmakers and you have blacksmiths and you have farmers and you have marines, and you know, so the four castes were a horizontal layer. You know, the people like you would be the Brahmins, you go to university, the knowledge people, the people who fight, the marines, yeah, the warrior class, the trading group, and the fourth was the creative artisanal community. It was not less and more. And there was no excessive power in any of them. There was a balancing power and mutuality. And then at the rise of Buddhism, and we had huge massacres at that time, they created the hierarchy, plus what was horizontal was made vertical, and what was chosen was made determined by birth. It's a historical issue. It's not forever. After that, the oppression started. And then we had independence. Our constitution was written by a Dalit, which is the lowest caste. Caste was abolished. My own name is part of the movement to fight caste. My parents just threw their caste name away. We became Shivas. Nobody can figure out what a Shiva is, you know, where you come from. Unfortunately, and I can't go too deeply into it, you can read two of my, you know, both Democracy as well as, I have a book called India Divided. It's come out from Seven Stories Press. Read it, because you know, the kind of divisions that this election has just overcome, which were also being played out as divisions around religious belief, are divisions being created all around the world, because part of what globalization does is take away economic democracy from people. And then it throws people to fight each other on identity as a way of securing electoral votes. So from the bottom as well as in the top, this politics of identity and culture replaces the politics of justice and equality. The caste issue is coming back under this new politics. Some things it's doing is good, some things bad. I mean, the next prime minister of our country could be a Dalit, Mayawati, the chief minister of the biggest state of India. She is the chief minister today through the electoral system. I mean, a lot of people make comparisons between her and Obama, but you know, my check is, what does she actually do for the people on the ground? So the caste system has nothing to do with the issue of agriculture. Everyone, every caste is in agriculture. The Dalits are there, you know, everyone is in agriculture. And in different states, it's a different formation.
Thanks, Dr. Shiva. Thanks, everyone, for asking questions. Now, Dr. Shiva will be available for the book signing in the lobby. So please let Dr. Shiva get into the lobby before everybody exits. Thanks.
Thanks so much.
You've been listening to a talk by Dr. Vandana Shiva, a physicist, social activist, and environmentalist from India, who spoke at Washington State University on Wednesday, November 5th, 2008.